The Wholeness of the Infinite God Principle. I want to talk about an important aspect of the God Principle that helps us better wrap our heads around its special nature. That important aspect is how its oneness has within it what we most often experience as a kind of duality. Not that old duality of good and evil, but ultimately a duality of two opposite goods. Some of the insights on this topic come from a special kind of thinking, infinite spiritual thinking, which may be a few levels of abstraction beyond what we might call spiritually minded thinking, and from the ensuing experiences. Of course, my descriptions are mostly finite models or metaphors, perhaps spiritual proto-science, since true knowing of the oneness is a whole nother matter. Infinite spiritual thinking is to this topic as mathematics is to physics. If we're going to talk about quantum mechanics with any rigor, we would need some higher math. Nevertheless, you can learn something of the principles of quantum mechanics without actually doing the math yourself. I'm going to attempt the same approach here, sharing some insights from infinite spiritual thinking, without getting too far into it. This means we're going to take a top-down approach, rather than starting with the world of observation and trying to work our way up to the first principle. We will use that approach for two reasons. First, it's much simpler. And second, it's really the best way to start thinking about this topic. In practice, I find the only way to get to the infinite oneness is to start there. For the sake of this discussion, let's just start with our sense of the divine as an infinite spiritual singularity. You may be familiar with the word singularity from knowing about theories related to the Big Bang from popular cosmology. In this case, the primary and overwhelming nature of this spiritual singularity is its oneness. This divine singularity, this oneness, is self-existent. Everything else is derivative. It would be worthwhile to spend some time thinking and meditating on this idea of infinite spiritual oneness, an infinite self-existent spiritual singularity, even one infinite I. That's the first person singular I. The oneness of the divine is one of its essential characteristics. So when we talk about this oneness as having attributes or qualities, it's to better understand the nature of the oneness. The oneness doesn't devolve into parts. It's indivisible. One. Don't mind that you can't picture that. It's ineffable. Grasping new ideas is often hindered by the need to let go of old ideas. So I'm trying to use language here that will minimize this hindrance. Instead of starting out talking about God, I'm starting out using the term God principle. So you'll already know we're not talking about any sort of personal or anthropomorphic idea of God, not some finite straw man. To jump ahead to the important part, let's agree to all the qualities and superlatives that are normally associated with the divine. Such descriptions are important, but they're not germane to this main point about the oneness in the apparent duality of good. In fact, the positive qualities commonly attributed to the divine are widely accepted across many religions. It's interesting that the main differences arise from dealing with negatives. So henceforth, when I use the term God, it means the God principle, not a supreme being, or even the supreme being, but supreme being itself. After its oneness, the aspect we are considering here is embedded in the way too simple expression that God is good. Someone once remarked to me that his spiritual practice had evolved to the point where it was almost like he was worshiping pure goodness. That's an interesting idea. I considered that for a while, even thinking of the God principle as pure infinite spiritual goodness. But I found, even with that collection of superlatives, something was missing. The key point I want to offer here is that we commonly experience that goodness has two sides to it. For example, it's good that I have a place to live. However, it's also good that there are no snakes in my house. So there's a goodness related to what is, and a goodness related to what is not. It's sort of like one of those advertisements you may have seen on TV where they say, their product provides everything you want and nothing you don't. Having everything you want and nothing you don't covers the basis for something to be considered completely good. This truism comes from and is organic to the nature of divinity and its oneness. If one's sense of goodness is only affirmative and not also what I am here calling exclusionary, then worshiping pure infinite spiritual goodness will at length fall short of the wholeness of the divine. It's not the whole story. Here are a few examples. Where I worked in the early 90s, we used to debate the definition of quality. Does it mean inherent goodness or freedom from defects? As I remember, the other choices were fitness for use and meeting the customer's requirements, which are a combination of both. There's a common saying used in the U.S. court system, to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Over the years, folks have figured out that the whole truth requires the truth and nothing but the truth. There's an exclusionary element required in order to attain wholeness. Many of the Bible passages that talk about God being one also add this exclusionary element, such as, I am God, and there is none else. And from the other side of the world, from the Bhagavad Gita, we have Krishna saying, I am what is, and I am what is not. And further on, he says, I am to be and not to be. His pupil responds, Thou art all that is and all that is not. The famous scientist Niels Bohr said, The opposite of a great truth is another truth. Then there's that favorite F. Scott Fitzgerald quote, The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposite ideas in mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. It has been written that God's truth is sharper than a two-edged sword. Why two-edged? Because it cuts two ways, the truth of what is and the truth of what isn't. And it's only one sword, only one whole truth. These examples are not all exactly logically aligned, but all hint at a point of view that can often enable the integration of apparent opposites in oneness from the standpoint of one infinite I. So what we're talking about here is to grasp the idea that we most often experience the oneness of divinity in terms of what is and what is not. The real power comes when we glimpse the singularity, that these are one at their source. In rare moments, so far for me anyway, when we experience the oneness of divinity in prayer, it's a spiritual realization of what really is, accompanied by a nearly simultaneous realization of what is not, of what can't possibly be. We learn from quantum theory that an electron can be detected as a particle or as a wave. It's still only one electron, but its particleness and waveness have been said to be in superposition. In a somewhat similar fashion, we variously experience that the God principle has an affirmative and an exclusionary aspect to it. I am God, and there is none else. It might be useful to consider that these two aspects exist in some sort of superposition in the divine. The oneness, with its integration of apparent opposites, unfolds itself to our understanding through infinite spiritual thinking, living, and loving. Once you understand the apparent superposition of opposites that seem to inhabit the oneness, you no longer are perplexed by the paradox of being and not being, or by other sets of opposites that may have seemed irreconcilable. So that's it. That's the important point I want to talk about. The infinite I, the infinite oneness, appears in the human dimension with an inclusive and exclusive aspect. It naturally includes all good and naturally excludes any hypothetical opposite. Obviously, bringing this spiritual concept of exclusion into the human scene must be done with great care. Reaching beyond the human dimension to the ineffable realm of the oneness involves being able to grasp the information in the phrase, "I'm God and there is none else," to be not two ideas, but one, one infinite, holy I. That's where the real action is. When that sinks in, you may wonder how to connect that first principle to our world of observation. For now, it may be best to think of it as a potentiality. It's like a potential energy. The way to turn it into kinetic energy is, of course, to put it into action. I posted some of these ideas on YouTube a few years ago, and now I've made a few changes in this audio supplement and added some follow-up comments to make it more complete. So this next is part two. In response to a viewer question, I want to be clear about the distinction between the unity and indivisibility of the oneness, the singularity of it, and what may be only our human experience of the duality of good, that which is and that which is not. At some point, both being effectively good, there's no longer a distinction between them, and we see them as an indivisible one. While it may have been convenient to say these opposite goods are in superposition in the oneness, that felt duality of goodness may only be in us. I sometimes wonder about the original thought that may have inspired this Bible verse. God hath spoken once, twice have I heard this, that power belongeth unto God. A second point comes from my often listening to the original video, where a few times I've glimpsed a fleeting wisp of spiritual perception of an absolute and all-encompassing primal goodness, a coherent light of pervasive spiritual goodness, as if at the end of a tunnel, showing itself to be the cause, the principle, of all. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. However, it does raise the question, if original primal causation is unbounded, simultaneously inclusive and exclusive goodness acting as one infinite divine principle, what accounts for humanity's too often apparent objective sense of the negative? To begin with, it's useful to recognize that for us to frame that question means we have left the standpoint of reflecting on pure spiritual causation and are weighing the testimony of the often unreliable human senses. Nevertheless, it's sometimes useful to come up with an explanation, even if an admittedly flawed explanation for the objective negative, if only to settle our thoughts. This need is encountered at every level of spiritual progress, and the explanations, thankfully, get more abstract as we progress. Here's a thought model I've found instructive. If you look in a concave mirror from within its focal distance, you see yourself right side up. If you move outside the focal distance, you appear to be upside down. The original you is still upright, but your image is now inverted. Outside the focal distance, you appear to be upside down. You appear to be inverted, even distorted. But you are, notwithstanding appearances, unchanged from your original upright self. This model provides a metaphor to illustrate the fact that there is nothing wrong with primal causation, with spiritual reality, as it comes direct from its source. Where there's a problem, it's only from the vantage of an observer viewing at a distance. I've had experiences on an early morning walk of seeing a squirrel in the shadows, and when I got close, I saw that it was really just a clump of leaves. So where did the squirrel go? There was no squirrel. The squirrel was a creation of my mind based on insufficient information, simply a misperception formed in my mind. Some combination of getting closer and more light makes the misperception disappear. When you pray, it can enable you to get closer to God. When you get within the focal distance of the divine, you can sometimes glimpse the forever spiritual fact that everything was made well and remains well, that everything is already all right. You can sometimes see that view where God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very, very good. Each such perception of that spiritual reality can uplift and improve the deep beliefs that frame the environment in which we live, and that can make all the difference. And a final point offers some wider perspective for your consideration. If you can think of the affirmative statement, "I am God," as an infinite presence, and the exclusionary statement, "There is none else," as an infinite absence, you may be able to picture spatially how one can fit in the other in oneness. The apparent duality of goodness, that which is and that which is not, fit together in oneness, much like the consummation of a father and mother, resulting in a new conception of the idea of their oneness. It's interesting that such patterns and principles are not unlike the Big Bang, where the immediate outcome is seen as two opposite goods. That is, it's good that there's an expanding space-time continuum, and it's also good that there is a dawn of light energy gradually showing itself as substance. Those two opposite goods, an expanse of place and a profusion of substance, appear simultaneously as one creation event, one whole creation, as if a faint replication of the wholeness of the infinite God principle, I. I hope some of this has made sense to you. Thank you for being a thoughtful listener. Until next time.